How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm terrific.
Oh, good.
This is an honor.
Aww.
And nobody has deserved this honor to
Aww.
be viewed by you.
Aww, thank
Okay.
you. Yay.
Okay.
Yay. We're set. Go.
Okay. Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Richard S. Tuma, Touma. I'm the father of four children and the grandfather of five children.
Nice. All
That's
right.
me. And I live in Teaneck, New Jersey.
Why don't you tell us where you grew up?
Oh, where I spent my childhood in Brooklyn, New York.
Why don't you tell us about that?
I lived in a community that was mostly children of immigrants. Most of them were, I lived in a Jewish community and in an Italian community. And when you asked someone, where are you from? You didn't tell them where you were from, you told them where your parents were from.
Ah.
But we were all integrated. All you could do was say, can you play ball or can't you play ball? Everybody
Nice.
played together.
So, what were your parents like?
What my friends like?
Yeah, what were they like?
My friends were short and tall, fat and skinny, some religious, some not religious. What we got together on was where we went to school and what we did on Saturday and Sunday, because most of our parents worked.
What was your home life like?
My home life?
Yeah.
Well, I had great parents. My parents were immigrants from Lebanon, and they were kind and generous and gentle. But they had to work very hard to make a living.
Yeah. Where did you go to school?
I went to PS 180 and Brooklyn Technical High School. And then I went to Cooper Union for a couple of years. And then I went to City College and got a degree in mechanical engineering.
Wow.
And then I got an. Some 10 years later, I got a master's in mechanical engineering.
What was your favorite part about the city?
My favorite thing?
Yeah.
One, the many, 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 many kinds of things you could do. The city was a place you could meet all kinds of people, you could do all kinds of things. Sometimes you did things you didn't want to because of who your friends were. Sometimes they did things that you wanted. But the city was a place where you could go to museums and libraries. The biggest evolution was my discovery of the library in the fourth grade.
Why don't you tell us about that?
We were taken by our grammar school teacher to walk about 3/4 of a mile to two stores that had been converted into the Brooklyn Public Library in my neighborhood. And I walked in and I said, wow, look at all these books. And the librarian officiously came up and said, you can read all the books on this side of the library, but you cannot go to the adult side, which meant that was a challenge. And so I kept for years trying to walk over into the adult section to read, because telling me I can't do something wasn't something I was thrilled with.
Yeah, I get that. So, how long did you, well, how much time did you spend at the library?
I used to go regularly. Sometimes I take out, well, the first time I took out 12 books.
Wow.
And And I didn't read all of them, but they all had a date that you had to return them. Mm-hmm. So you tried not to get on the bad side of the librarian or be fined 2 cents a day if you sent, you brought in a book late.
Yeah.
But we had it, the discovery that there were that many books was like a big revelation.
Yeah. Well, what was it like living through the Great Depression?
It was something that we understood was there. Mm-hmm. And we experienced a lot of men out of work. But as a kid, as long as you had a roof of where I lived, as long as you had a roof on your over your head, mm-hmm. and enough food to eat, you understood that the world was going through some tough times, mm-hmm. because we'd had people coming to our door wanting to sell razor blades or pencils or apples, and what they really were hungry. Mm-hmm. So my mother always seemed to find a way to find an empty icebox and get a meal out of it for whoever was needy. Mm-hmm. But you really tried to take care of yourself and your family.
Yeah.
And everybody was in the same situation. Everybody reacted differently. Some were happy, some were sad, some were grumpy. And part of the problem of poverty is that you scramble so hard. But we were lucky that we had pretty good elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And that joined us together. We didn't worry. We knew who was in my class, who was an Ashkenazi Jew or a Southern Italian or Irish, or mm-hmm. in my neighborhood, there were a lot of Norwegians. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't why you went to school. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't an impediment to going to school.
Mm-hmm. What was your school experience like?
What was my school what?
Experience like.
I was spoiled. I was the first of two boys born to my parents. Mm-hmm. And so in a world where the first male child seemed to be important to my dad, mm-hmm. I thought that I was, my parents made me feel I was bright. Mm-hmm. And it turned out as I got into class, I was at the top of my class, not the top, but I was fairly bright. Yeah. So you have an attitude about, and I guess I maybe you can tell me. I can remember all my teachers from the first, from kindergarten to the sixth grade when but I can't remember, I can no longer remember the name of my third grade teacher.
Oh.
But when I have a name, I usually get a visual picture. Mm-hmm. And the depression was hard for my parents as I look back. I mean, all my memories are also tainted by the life I lived after. I lived after my childhood.
Yeah. Wow.
Sometimes your visions weren't as great. And then when they promoted kids and I wasn't getting promoted, and the teachers were all women that I had. Mm-hmm. And look to me about a million years old. They probably only 10 or 15 years older. But I had an understanding mother and an understanding father.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do?
My father started, worked in a restaurant for a corporation called Child's Family Restaurants. My mother, from time to time, my mother was a full-time mother, from time to time, would take on making blouses and dresses for a wholesaler who lived in the neighborhood. Some, in many cases, the women worked and the men worked in when they did, when they wore jobs. Because they had to afford paying the rent and that kind of stuff.
How did you get to school every day?
To the grammar school, I walked. It was only a block away. To the junior high school, where I stayed a year and a half, I walked about a mile to get there. To the high school, that was a big, when somebody came to me in junior high school and said, are you going to take the test for Brooklyn Tech? And I said, what the heck is that? My parents had no idea about high schools and colleges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He said, oh, it's the best school in Brooklyn. And so I went home and said, Dad, you know, what do you think? And he said, well, if you have a trade, when the next depression comes, you'll have something to fall back on, which I didn't have as an immigrant. But then the problem was my father going to allow me to travel the subway for 45 minutes every morning and every afternoon? And did we have, the subway then was 5 cents.
Wow.
Each way, so that made 10 cents. Did we have the 50 cents a week to get to school and back? And so they said yes, and they thought it as a plus, and so a bunch of kids took the test, a few got in, and I started 4 years of technical high school.
Wow. What was your first job?
My first job out of high school? Oh no, my first job was, I started working when I was 12, delivering things for the Joe. There was a kosher butcher named Joe, and he hired me to put sawdust on the floor and bones. And and then I had a number of, we all shopped at local shops. We had, like, the local Italian store was owned by a guy named Rosenberg. Spoke three Italian languages. But merchants built up specialties, and you'd go shopping very often because you didn't have the money, and they would allow you to charge whatever you bought that week, and then you'd pay it off when your father or your mother got a paycheck. Going to tech was a whole different thing, because now I'm out of my neighborhood, I'm out of the world I lived in, and I'm going to school with children from all over Brooklyn, all over Queens, all over Staten Island, all over Manhattan, who had come because somebody said it was really a good school and was rigorous. So you now met, you thought you were smart in your grammar school, you were a little less smart in your junior high school. But when you got to high school, you met a lot of bright people.
Yeah.
And you had to, and you know, you were saddled with trips on the subway and good weather and bad weather and meeting all these people and trying to make friends and trying to do your best.
Were you treated differently because you were an immigrant?
Did I what?
Were you treated differently because you were a son of an immigrant?
Yes.
How so?
You looked at yourself as, when you get to a high school, you suddenly, what I knew as a child was everyone was a child of an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
When you got to the high school, there was a lot of that, and there was a lot of different, I mean, I can tell you that my name is Tuma, begins T-O, Trovato was behind me, Visotsky was behind him,
mm-hmm.
Hubie Walsh was behind him. So people came and they claimed to be real Americans, which meant that not only they were their grandparents were born here. I never met anyone like that until I got to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you looked at yourself as bright, but somewhat emotionally needy. Maybe wow. not up to, but it made you drive harder.
Mm-hmm.
And that I learned in elementary school.
Yeah. If there's one thing you want to say to the kids at my school, what would that be?
You go to Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
See, in preparation, I said, is there a Worcester I know? I was active for a long time in the Engineering Society, Mechanical Engineering Society. And Worcester to me was an engineering school in a town in Massachusetts. The only other Worcester I knew was a person who developed the first usable dictionary about 1850. That's Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, well, I know two Worcesters, a dictionary writer and a town in Massachusetts. All I know about Worcester after that is what you've told me,
mm-hmm.
and what your mom has told me. I guess, I don't know. I once ran a program for 8 or 9 years for teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Who had in a program called Upward Bound, and they had limits on the amount of money that they or their family had. Many of them were, if not homeless, pretty much close to that. So I learned to work with them. Working with the children at your school
mm-hmm.
would be different because your backgrounds are different and your senses of confidence are different. I guess it's to be brave in terms of having your opinion and standing by it
mm-hmm.
to differentiate between that and courageous.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing called bravery and another thing called courageous.
Mm-hmm.
Easily said, bravery is if your friend walked up to you and you argued and he or she hit you and you hit back and they're a lot bigger than you, that's brave.
Mm-hmm.
Brave to take on a challenge where you get involved directly. Courageous is where you see something is wrong and you step in to correct it. Wow. The fight isn't yours. And it comes, you see it in Bibles, like, you know, comfort the afflicted in the Old and New Testaments, that you reach out and help. You reach out for fairness. You reach out and you maintain your own dignity. One of the problems, I'm using two words my father used a lot, who was, I think, went to the third grade at best. My mother never went to school, but my father would use two words, dignity and respect. And you have to maintain your dignity. You don't ever want to pander just to be heard or for someone to give you something. Mm-hmm. And you want to respect and listen to other people. Doesn't mean you have to agree, because Lord knows I say things that people go, oh, you did it again. But the respect you deserve, you want. I have a tendency to talk over people. You know, I get exuberant about my idea and I don't let other people talk. So learning to listen, maybe that's the suggestion I can give them. Oh. Learn to listen. It's hard, mm-hmm. particularly if you think you're right.
Yeah.
I've learned that since I don't see too well, I'm vision challenged, mm-hmm. that people seem to think that I'm either dopey or I can't hear. Mm-hmm. So they talk louder.
Oh.
I don't see, so they talk louder. I don't understand what that's about.
It doesn't make much sense. But,
yeah. I mean, but we have a tendency to bypass those who are challenged in our minds. Mm-hmm. And we have a tendency to put them a little below us. Yeah. So having to listen, it's very hard. I used to teach courses for business executives, and the hardest lecture I had to give was how to listen. Mm. Very tough. Yeah. Because everybody who's a leader thinks that they know how to be a leader. And it's really listening and knowing who you're talking to.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I thought you'd have 20 questions.
Well, we're going to do another one, but that's all for today.
Oh. My God, now I have to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of the day.
Oh.
Okay, Miss Worcester. I love you. I love you. I love you. And thank you. Thank you for giving me the honor of interviewing me.
Oh, you're welcome.
And that was so nice. And you made it so easy.
Oh, thank you.
I hope that the rest of your day goes terrific. Mm-hmm. And whether the sun is shining where you are, it's shining here.
Oh.
And I thank Uncle Gary for making it possible.
Yes, thank you.
I know that he will do almost anything. He ran up and down those steps 42 times. So you ought to be honored that he did.
Yeah.
I thank you, honey. And say hi to your mom.
I will.
And your dad.
I will.
And your brother.
Okay.
And your dog.
Will do.
Goodbye.